your stress. For the ADA Dental Minute, I'm Dr. Maria Lopez Howell. To find out more about your dental health, visit ADA online at ada.org.
Looking for love? Are you ready for a long-term committed relationship? Do you dream of curling up next to someone who is warm and loving? If you answer yes to all of these, you may be ready to open your heart and your home to one of the millions of dogs and cats who are waiting in shelters for a permanent home. By adopting your four-legged friend rather than buying one from a breeder or a pet store, you'll help save a life and find true love. For more information, please visit helpinanimals.com. That's helpinganimals.com.
Quentin Crisp. You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. We'll be right back.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hi, everybody.
And we're still traveling. We hopped on a train, and we're heading eastbound now. We decided to try to travel to Russia without a visa. And let me tell you, that's been nothing but an adventure from start to finish. We've currently an hour east of Moscow, heading into the tundra. And I think we've raised the suspicion of the train conductor, so we're going to try and keep a low profile for this show. So if we stop talking for no reason at all, that's probably why. I don't like the way he's looking at us.
Yes, and I already scoped out two cars up. There is, I think, one open bathroom.
That's the locomotive, Kyle.
The other one's locked. What?
I think you're right. I think that's where you have to go to the bathroom in these things. But, you know, there's a lot of suspicious people on the train. You just got to be a little careful. It's not as bad as people think it is to travel without a visa in Russia.
If you go into that car.
We ran out of train. I'm sorry. I only had a minute. Oh, no. We're back, folks. We're here in the studios. We would never, never travel without a visa in Russia. Not knowingly, anyway. It's been, 5 weeks since we've been here? Early December, I think, right?
Yeah, almost a month and a half.
I couldn't find the station. I forgot where it was. I went to the old studio.
Yeah, it's definitely intercession, I believe, is the word you referred to.
Which means, in Latin, the loneliest time of the year, because nobody's on campus. It's cold. There would be snow if we did things right in this country, but it's just cold.
There are signs of life on campus for those of you students still out there making your way back.
Oh, those geese.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean the
No, I saw a bus or two, a couple of parked cars.
But those aren't signs of life. That's signs of mechanical revolution.
It is very un-university-like here, but it's good to be back, as you said, and boy... Yeah,
that was awesome. I got to say, just we're still recovering. I've even gotten sick since I got back. Imagine that, traveling for 5 weeks and not getting sick, but as soon as I get back home, I get sick.
I think your body just like catches up, and you get everything kind of like starts colliding, and you're adjusting, and your sleep is all off, and all of those factors just come to rest, and you know you. You basically have to catch up with yourself and remind yourself, oh, yeah, that was that thing that my body wanted to punish me with a couple weeks ago, but now it's here.
Well, there's definitely
it gets to wake up. And
it's punishment. I'm being punished, absolutely. There's some revenge going on internally because, yeah, I did subject myself to all sorts of things. But you know, we had a bargain, my body and myself, we had a bargain that, just let me get through this and... When I get home, you know, whatever. If I need to be laid up in bed for a week, that's fine.
We really did have all kinds of adventures, pushing ourselves to the limits. I pushed myself up to the top of the Bundestag.
It was your idea. Let me just point this out. You don't like climbing up on high buildings.
Well, especially high buildings with, like, see-through floors and glass everywhere and...
Which they seem to do a lot of in Europe.
They love their glass floors and crazy drops and vertical layers of height, and it just you can't tell where it's solid, and everything goes down three or four more stories. And anyway,
it's not the Reichstag. Well, is it the Reichstag or is it the Bundestag? I don't know. They tell you it's supposed to be called the Bundestag. Not the Reichstag, but it's listed as the Reichstag. It's the head of government in Berlin, in Germany, and it's incredible. It's an old building, but it's got this new top to it that allows you to basically walk around kind of a spiral all the way to the top, and anytime you want, you can just look over the edge and see the auditorium at the ground level, which is the same level where they meet, where the government meets. Man, it is scary on a whole variety of levels, but that's kind of standard.
It's really only since about 1989 we learned that it's been in this particular building. It's supposed to be a metaphor for transparency and the people being able to see the machinations of their government. And we'd always passed by it and talked about it and watched it on Euronews or wherever we are.
See, I had a theory that is basically designed that way to put the fear of the Lord into you so that You were just in a state of natural shock and panic when you're near the government, so that whatever they do, you'll just accept because you don't want it to get any worse. That's my theory on that.
That was the subtext, and some of the first reviews of it actually included that theory, but... when they actually caught up with the designer, he had a prepared statement and was able to lie quite eloquently and head that off before it actually turned into something that had to be revised later.
I guess we should tell people when we wound up in certain places in case anyone's keeping track. Last week, you might have heard, it was the second part of our long walk down Windsor. It's called the Long Walk. It's basically that miles-long path to Windsor Castle.
It's like a driveway.
It's a hell of a lot like a driveway, but a very long one. It took us two shows to walk down the length of it. And we didn't even get all the way to the castle because they have this gate there.
We were just trying to talk about what we'd been doing and catch up the listeners and recount our adventures thus, you know, up until that point. So... It was just this conversation that kind of it turned into, well, a really interesting conversation, and we met people along the way. It is, I think, 4 miles. Or we did down one way. We weren't recording.
Yeah, we had to walk to the end to start in the first, because you don't just get let off at the end of it. You get let off, I think, towards the other end. We had to walk back to where that horse was. We still haven't found out that story of the horse.
Do you remember the challenge while we were walking down?
The challenge when we were walking
down? Well, we had a game I made up.
What was the game?
Don't look at the castle.
Oh, right. Don't look at the castle. That wasn't a game. That was a command.
You
said, do not turn around.
Yeah,
I took that seriously.
No, I was very, very serious and enforcing it and reminding you the entire way down not to look back until we were all the way at the other end and could look back in awe.
And we were at the statue of the horse, and there's a guy on top of the horse, too. I think his name was George. Turned around, saw the castle way off in the distance, and then we did the same thing going back. I think we turned around a couple of times, and we couldn't see the statue after a while. It was very far in the distance. But it was a nice walk. It was a nice day, and we had a lot to talk about, two shows worth, in fact. But since then, we spent Christmas in London, which was something – I don't know if I've ever done that. It's really a nice city to hang out in around the holidays.
If you ever want to feel close to a lot of people, go around with – I don't know, a couple bags and look for wrapping paper and stuff on Christmas Eve in the middle of the shopping district in London. That's how you get close with people. And And they might push you off a curb into traffic. And we enjoyed ourselves. We just kind of thrust ourselves into the middle of this sort of consumer stew of shoppers and people going everywhere. And, we walked around. We stayed up late. We got kicked out of Waterloo Station. That was fun.
That was fun. We went – why did we go to Waterloo Station?
Well,
we were walking around, and we saw trains. We walked over a bridge. It wasn't London Bridge, I don't think. And we saw trains elevated on the other side. And so we decided to walk in that direction. Excuse me.
You've still got a little bit of that itch in your throat that you were talking about. So, in any event, we crossed over.
I wasn't kidding. I'm sick.
Yeah, really. You should. A little bed rest, a little chicken soup, maybe. I'm sure that'll work its way out in no time.
All right. Well, I hope you're prepared to supply these things because it's difficult.
We'll talk after the show. Over there near Waterloo, we were walking around late and followed the trains and looked for this sort of raised track and then realized it was, oh my gosh, this is Waterloo Station, one of the largest stations. I mean, a huge, huge station.
They have a lot of train stations in England, and by train stations, I mean real train stations where trains come and go. You know, it's a small country. It's a fairly small country, but they have so many trains going in different directions. So if you're going, you know, in one direction, then you'll go to Euston Station. If you go to another direction, you'll go to King's Cross or maybe St. Pancras. Don't call it St. Pancras. I don't like that. Then there's Waterloo. Waterloo, which used to have the Eurostar. It used to be Waterloo International because Eurostar would come from Paris. And now that train goes to St. Pancras. There's other stations, too, but they're all so big and filled with activity. And we spent so much time in Waterloo just kind of walking around, taking it all in. And we found this amazing art exhibit on the second floor. Yeah, they have two floors.
Yeah, it was hosted by the train station, and it was all of landscapes, basically. Landscapes from all over Great Britain, and contests, I think, hosted or at least displayed. The winners were displayed there in the station in this sort of upper walkway, and we got just lost, totally absorbed
we
in all these
only
beautiful
ones,
photos.
Only ones upstairs looking at these, and we were just taking our time, enjoying all the pictures, because there were such amazing photographs. If you happen to be in London, and that's still there, I definitely recommend going over to Waterloo Station, hopping on to the second floor and just spending a couple of hours looking at all those amazing photographs. And you as a photographer especially could see the importance of that.
Yeah, I found it so interesting. They were putting technical details of how each shot was captured down to the shutter speed, but also the types of equipment. And something that's really important, and we may not think about as much, but the software that was used. Software is like a really big deal in producing good digital photos these days, and doing effects and all these kinds of things, and just to get an idea of what tools and things are out there to help you create a mood and set a scene and so on with still photos, I found so fascinating. So we just took it in, and we took in a little too long, because up the escalator came someone basically tapping his foot behind us, with a radio saying, it's closed, and, you have to go here. You have to, I'm sorry, no, you have to, no, you can't finish,
we
you have to leave.
We literally had one more section to go through, and they wouldn't let us look at those, so we didn't see the last row of pictures, which kind of upset me. But yeah, Waterloo Station was closing. Was it Christmas? That was Christmas Eve.
We were aware that, the transit system in London was going to completely shut down.
But that wasn't it. It wasn't the transit system shutting down, because we could still get on the underground. It was just that station was shutting down at that time. I didn't know that was going to happen.
Yeah, there were renovations and other logistical things going on, and because of the holiday, a lot of the major parts of the system were shutting down. I think even the tube did shut down, but a little bit later, not quite as early as the main train station. Which had repairs and other things that were scheduled during the holiday there. And they desperately needed the time to do it, and that led to us being shooed away from this station. And eventually we found our way around, and, well we had to get back into Europe at some point,
right? First of all,
right?
Yeah, but it wasn't that easy to find our way out of there, because they directed us to the underground station, and there was no underground station where they pointed. And everybody leaving the station was getting lost. And finally, we just hopped on board a bus and got out of there.
That's right. You found a bus.
Yeah, because, you know, that's the thing to do. If you can't find the underground station and you have a day pass, just hop on a bus and wait until you see an underground station and get on there and figure it out. But, you know, what was funny was when we got back to our hotel room, and I should put that in quotes, hotel room, we turned on the TV, and there was this movie on, and one of the scenes was taking place in Waterloo Station. We were looking at the exact same place we had just been, and it wasn't like it was a local film. It was something that was globally distributed. It just happened to be that we turned on the TV, and there it was, the very same station we were wandering around in.
I like those happy coincidences.
Yeah, we had a few of those.
Yeah, when you're looking at something, you're interested in something, or you go to a place, and then you see stories about a certain place, happens to be the place you were just visiting, and mm-hmm. Maybe you knew a little bit about the history, like just the history of the stuff I was talking about in Germany. It really, really had a lot of parallels and interesting connections.
Now, you know what's interesting, though, is that on Christmas Day, there are no trains, and that includes underground and includes buses throughout England.
Yes.
They all shut down. So that is, it's a weird thing to be walking around that city and not see any buses and know that there are no trains running anywhere. You're out of luck if you need to get somewhere on that day. And we left the day after, but it was still limited service. So we were a little bit nervous about getting to our station, St. Pancras, so we could get on the Eurostar and head over to Leipzig, which is where the conference we went to, the Chaos Communication Congress, was. So we actually had a number of trains to catch in order to do that. We had something like a 20-minute connection in Brussels to get to another train that took us closer to Leipzig. I think there was another train after that. But we were nervous that, you know, maybe because it's a day after Christmas, they call it Boxing Day over there, there wouldn't be enough trains, underground trains, to get us to the train station. But fortunately, we were able to make it. We made all our connections.
Yeah, we did some funny things, too. We were hanging around at airports at weird times just to get the train, not to actually use a plane. And
oh, that's right. Before we went to London.
Yeah.
Because we stayed. Okay. You ever see the movie Room?
Yeah, where the kids, like, locked in a room for...
Yeah,
yeah.
That was our room near Heathrow Airport, because when we went to the castle, to do the castle walk...
Windsor.
Windsor Castle. I didn't know it was actually considered inside London, or I might have figured out some other place to stay. But I found this place, and it was incredibly cheap. It was ridiculously cheap. In fact, most of the places we stayed in were insanely cheap. I don't think we spent over $100 for any room we stayed in, and some of them were below 50. Which is really kind of crazy when you think about it. This one was one of the cheaper ones. It was just it was a room. I mean, nothing else. It was across the street from this cheap hotel. They couldn't even fit it inside the hotel. It was in a different house. I read the reviews, and I was ready for this because people were freaking out about that. They put us in this strange house across the street. It was so scary and weird. And you know, so if you're prepared for that, then you know they can't really throw you for a loop. No television set, no bathroom. You had to walk down a hallway in a house by yourself to find the bathroom. And you're right next to Heathrow Airport, which is also kind of weird.
Yeah, and that helped us. We ended up returning our car because airports have rental returns, and that's how we access transit. We basically, instead of returning it in another part of London, which would have been all kinds of traffic and stuff, we used the airport, which was kind of hilarious because we were there. We were just like we'd come in on a flight or leaving on a flight, but we just caught a train and continued on, got our Eurostar, and got out of Great Britain.
Yes, a few days after that. Because what we did was we went from Windsor and then to a different part of London and hung out there for a few days. And we took the underground to do all that.
And those day passes, London, the Oyster card, it's going to be something to look forward to when that comes to fruition out here.
It's coming to New York.
It's pretty convenient. Mm-hmm. We had basically these RFID cards and would get day passes and use any kind of mode of transportation, really to our delight. And
basically, you walk in the entrance or the bus, and you slap the card onto the little thing there. Or what do you call the little thing that you slap the card onto? How would you describe that?
It's
not a screen.
Yeah, it's like a
platform
reader, card reader.
Yeah, it's not immediately obvious that's what it is, but you put your card on that, it goes beep, and then you're in. Thing is, though, on the train, you have to do it on the way out. And in New York, I know we don't do that on the way out. So I hope that they don't change the system so you wind up paying more at different times or to different locations.
Tracks you everywhere you go.
But at some point, what it does, it calculates the best fare for you. So if you use enough trips to make a day pass pay off, then you have a day pass for that day.
Yep.
If you only use it once and it only charges you for the one time, there's all kinds of options. It's a very good system, and one that I hope is implemented soon in the New York area. But I got to say, you know, we're using our credit cards, and it's great. You know, now we've got the chips on our credit cards. Remember all the times we would travel, and, you know, we'd be treated like second-class citizens because everybody in Europe has chips, and we had the damn mag stripe. And some people couldn't figure out how to do that. And now we have the chips, so we can be treated like equals. Except now, people in Europe have advanced even further, and they have RFID in their cards. And so they're waving our card at a machine. That machine has no idea what this card is, because we don't have that on our cards. We have the chips now. So it's no end of frustration just trying to catch up.
Yeah, and there are things we learned about that are beyond that I won't get into, but it just seems we're always two or three technologies behind. Payment is one system that we're rapidly seeing a lot of differences in that, and trying our best. We like to pay for everything that we do. When you're in a foreign country, if you don't pay, that really makes your trip uncomfortable.
Oh yeah.
In a variety of ways.
We try to make sure all that's taken care of.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah.
It's a nice thing to do.
We had some fun misadventures on local German trains and stuff like that, basically using systems that were all German or Polish, and that was a way to test our knowledge of a system, even using some of the translate software on smartphones to try to read a screen and figure out what ticket to purchase.
Yeah, we journeyed into Poland after we were in Germany at the Chaos Congress. Spent some time there. I think Poland's my new favorite country. I really do. It's just such an amazing place.
Yeah, New Year's was very low key in Warsaw. A lot of people were saying fireworks are canceled because of dogs.
The dogs objected to the fireworks, so but they didn't really cancel them because I heard plenty of fireworks.
We heard a lot of fireworks.
It wasn't
there.
Like Germany though.
No, it was nowhere near Germany, and I think we've seen that a bunch, and basically it was. It was nice. It was a little bit more calm. But we ventured around. We walked around Warsaw a lot and spent a couple days there after New Year's and the Congress. And then we checked out Krakow.
Yeah, we did. But to get to Poland, we found a train. It was actually, I think, four trains that we had to take from Leipzig, which is where the Chaos Congress took place. This is the weird part, because I found this before we left. I found this ticket that involved a bunch of local trains, but for some reason the railroad people, bond.de, they couldn't send me an electronic version of the ticket. They had to mail it. I don't know. You know, sometimes they do amazing things, and sometimes they just go back about 40 years and insist on mailing you a ticket. Now, there wasn't any way I could get a ticket in time before we left, so I had to have the ticket sent to a friend in Germany who was able to get us a ticket when we saw them at the Congress. But by the time we got the ticket, it was just one little piece of paper. This little piece of paper enabled us to get on four different trains, and one of them had a seat reservation, too. So one of the trains had assigned seating for us, and the other three just was basically admission to the train. But it was amazing how much information was conveyed on that one piece of paper and how everybody understood what that meant. It went through two different countries. We had to transfer. Remember, we had to transfer in Berlin at Hauptbahnhof, which is the big train station there.
Yeah.
And when I say big train station, basically they have a bunch of tracks below ground, and then they have a bunch of tracks above ground. We had to get from below ground to above ground in 9 minutes. One train connection, and the other train was leaving, and that was the last train to Poland for that day, so we had to make sure we made that connection. Now, imagine this, the LIRR trying to make a connection anywhere, and getting it within 9 minutes. You can't do it. It's impossible. But there, in Germany and in most parts of Europe, you can pretty much time it to the minute, if not the second.
We made it with time to spare. I think we had 4 or 5 minutes once we were up on the top.
Yeah,
track.
We were fine. The train got in exactly when it was supposed to. We went up all the escalators. Could have taken an elevator, I guess, all the way up. But, we were following all the signs. It was very easy. You know, the mark of countries that are basically figuring it all out is if they can convey information to people who don't speak the language. That's something I think we could learn from. You know, if it's easy for you to say to somebody who doesn't speak your language, this is how you get from this point to this point, and they make it like we did without any problems, you're doing something right.
Yeah, intuitive displays and symbols and just overall, like, layout, the design of where you put tracks and putting connections next to one another, or if they are far away, making it at least consistent enough that someone could run to it. And still make it. And then, of course, being on time. Yes, punctuality is also very helpful.
And it was amazing. You know, we made it on time. We made it into our assigned seat. I think that was the train we had the assigned seat for. And that got us into another country. That got us into Poland. And the whole thing cost something like $40 for 12 hours of train riding that got us from Germany to Poland.
That was a long stretch of trains.
It was, and it wasn't the most luxurious, but it was certainly the most economical, and it got us where we wanted to go, and we arrived, I think, an hour before New Year's in Warsaw. And, yeah, you know, wandering around a city like that is fun. You figure out the mass transit system there as well. It's pretty simple.
It's pretty big. A lot of the crosswalks are underground.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they don't even bother with you being above ground in traffic. You basically go underground, and it's like a street corner and little shops and corner stores are all underground, and you can get to any one corner of the street there. There's a lot of those kind of intersections, as well as some crosswalks and stuff. But Warsaw's big. It's a big, big city, and we were right downtown. Just spent a little bit of New Year's Day and some of the other time we had there. Wandering around, checking out the city, going to different parts of town, places we had been before, familiar parts of town. I think we even went by We went by a couple of memorials as a part of, I think, the edges of the Warsaw Ghetto.
Yes. Yeah, we did. That was we went to a couple of really amazing, interesting places that kind of knock you on your head and should. And if you're ever in Warsaw, it's worth tracking down. It wasn't the easiest thing in the world because it's not the most obvious thing in the world, but we were actually not far away from where the Warsaw Ghetto, a part of it was, and where a big part of it is still standing, or at least part of the wall. And so we went over there. And in case you don't know, the Warsaw Ghetto was something that the Nazis set up during the Holocaust to keep Jews in a particular pen, pretty much. And there was an uprising at one point. And, I'd like to say the uprising was successful. It was not. It was basically met with a massacre afterwards. But it's a really solemn tribute to what happened, what was going on at that time in the world that so many of us were blind to and continue to be blind to. Because, you know, you tell people these things, you tell people about the history, and so many people have never even heard of it. And it's not their fault, you know. It's basically it's our educational system not teaching these things, and it's our mass culture that kind of glosses over it all, and that's why it happens again and again. That's why it repeats itself. That's why, you know, the future can look dark, because if you don't learn from the lessons of the past, it's inevitable. And what a horrible period of time that was. And, you know, we continued on from Warsaw to Krakow. They actually have this amazing high-speed train in Poland now. How did this happen? Well, I know how it happened. The European Union invested a lot of money, and now Poland has a better train system than the United States. And, you know, we could have we couldn't have joined the EU, but we could have certainly invested money and built our infrastructure like these countries are doing. Last time I took a trip from Warsaw to Krakow, it took a long time. This was fast. Even though the train was weird, the train was late. In fact, the train was so late that it came about the same time as the train that was supposed to come before it. Actually, that train was later. Two trains arriving at the same time going to the same place, which is a very strange thing. So, okay, yeah, they have some schedule issues, but when the train actually gets moving, it's incredibly fast. And really nice, too. They fed us. I didn't know they were going to give us food. So that's something. Even Amtrak doesn't do that.
Yeah, and had all kinds of amenities you'd expect on like, German trains, including internet and yes, meals and all kinds of refreshments. And, yes, they really take good care of you if you're in some of the other – well, the class of this one was, I think one stretch of it was something like business class or something.
No, we did, you know, we don't do this often, but we took a first class train because it was so cheap. We figured, why not? You know, this one high speed rail thing that we're going to do in Poland, let's treat ourselves to go first class. I just didn't know it came with all these frills, so that was really kind of cool.
We had seen pieces of these trains before when we were in Kiev on different legs. We took more of the regional transit, and all these cars, as you said, are the rolling stock is new stuff. It was in part funded by the EU, and you know that because there's signs, actual like stickers on the sides of the trains, and in each of the train cars have a sign with the EU flag, and it basically says in Polish and I think a little bit of English, but it basically describes how it was paid for, how much of the Polish government, how much they contributed, and how much the EU contributed, and how much it costs in total, and that this indeed was funded by this union of 27, I think, countries. So say what you will about the European Union, it does tend to invest in the countries that become part of its member states, perhaps more so than we would expect here in the U.S. We are critical of federal monies and want states to be self-sufficient and not be entirely dependent or take away from any other things. We're real big on equity, but the EU is in an interesting way, you know, really putting money into places that sorely need it. And I can think of plenty of U.S. states that could use as much contribution,
yeah,
but we're just not organized.
I dare say if Puerto Rico was in the European Union, they'd be in much better shape than they are here in the United States.
Yeah, great example.
We'll probably have more to say about the EU since they are in the news quite a bit today.
Yeah, I don't want to overshadow the story here with current stuff.
Yeah, but you know, it all basically fits together because it's, you know, there are so many lessons to learn from seeing these things.
And so impressive to experience yourself.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But speaking of impressive, Krakow. I love Krakow. I've been there once before. It's, you know, as opposed to Warsaw, it's not as big. But both cities have what's known as the Old Town area, where basically these are buildings centuries old. Except in Warsaw, they're not really centuries old because it was bombed to oblivion during World War II, had to be rebuilt. Krakow, though, it's not the case. Those are actually original structures in many instances. So it feels more authentic.
Yeah, you have the like old castles and really ancient stuff that's truly, truly ancient.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, as you said, in Warsaw, some of the only remaining buildings, there are very few of them, in particular buildings of the Warsaw Ghetto and other places because of, well, what happened after the uprising. They went in and basically blew up a lot of stuff, as well as what the Allies were doing to Warsaw at that time. So for us, it was cool to experience the true old town in Krakow. And Krakow's much smaller, yeah, and feels, I guess, very, very modern and stuff. But, yeah, like more homey. I don't know. We felt at home there. It was very
very much, yes.
Comfortable. They have a tram system with really any kind of car. They have really new cars, really old cars. You never know. It's kind of a crapshoot. Reminded me a lot of our experience with trams in Portugal, in Lisbon, where they have these very, very old and newer ones kind of all mixed together.
Mm-hmm.
And we got very familiar with that. And basically we're around this park that surrounds Old Town in the very center of Krakow.
And there was also snow on the ground.
And indeed, it felt truly like winter. We had a great place that was next to the trains. Really, really affordable.
See, I read that in the reviews, too. Oh, it's next to the train tracks. How horrible. And I thought, it's next to the train tracks. How great. And
no.
I actually requested a room next to the tracks, and the guy was very happy to give that to me.
I love that you were going through the reviews at what people were complaining about. And when you travel, you realize that they're, you know, Yelp is nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that Yelp doesn't matter. It's all about, like, TripAdvisor and the other sites that actually have a bit of reviews. That's all that the restaurants ever want you to comment on is that site over the other sites.
That's true.
And, well, anyway, so you've got all your trip resources, and here you are going through negative reviews on, I'm assuming, TripAdvisor or whatever site, hotels.
Negative review from a negative person is something I take interest in because they're probably latching upon something that I would find fascinating.
Because you can deal, or it's something you're actually interested in, and they're polar opposite, and they can't stand it.
And we're literally paying about $30 a night to stay in this place, and, you know, I'm not going to complain for rates like that. I'm going to try and take it in as much as possible. And occasional trains passing by, that's something I actually like, so I had a great time.
Yeah, it was very soothing, you know, the trains lulling us to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Very often. And in that crisp, snowy weather, it just really felt like what we were after. We were after true winter because we hadn't at that time seen any of it, not in the UK,
mm-hmm.
Barely on the high seas in the Atlantic. And Leipzig, too, was cold but not snowing. And
that's right. We didn't mention that. We came across on the Atlantic Ocean. You might have heard that in several shows ago. We took the boat, and, that was all on the same trip.
Yeah, I can't believe it. It was a true diversity, too. We saw so many different ways of staying and from the sort of upper crust type experience or business class and trains all the way to, airport rooms that are basically where, you know, like baggage handlers try to find a cheap night. Anyway,
some of the
it
rooms,
ran the gamut.
Some of the rooms we stayed in, though, that one in London, not the one we call room by the airport, the one in I think it's in the Clapham area. This place just it's the faulty towers, I swear, of London. Because they don't know what they're doing. They really don't. Every day is another catastrophe. Something goes wrong. And in our case, every night we get locked out of our room. The card somehow would change, and we'd have to get it reprogrammed. And there was always, like, somebody who was 16 years old at the desk dealing with all kinds of unruly people because, you know, not the most savory types of people would come to a place like that. I guess, you know, we're included in that bunch.
Wasn't there a screaming guy in the hallway or something?
I think there was a lady that was screaming. Okay. There might have been a couple of people screaming. There was another person threatening both the hotel clerk and somebody upstairs who apparently was making noise with physical violence if he didn't do something about it right now. And we were just trying to get into our room. You know, that's kind of a nice thing when you pay for a room to be able to get into it. And there was one point, this was actually our last night, where they said, yeah, you know, we can't figure it out. The guy's not going to be until 8 in the morning. And basically saying, yeah, okay, so you just have to wait until 8 in the morning. And that wasn't really acceptable to us, first of all, because we had to leave at about 8 in the morning to go to Germany. And second of all, because that's not acceptable, period. So, you know, at some point you have to put your foot down and say, yeah, that's not going to happen. That's not going to work. I made it clear that the door would open one way or another, with their help or without their help. Our stuff was in there. We needed to get to our stuff. And, they figured it out.
We waited them out. Yeah,
they figured it out.
I think they had tools. They were taking things apart. And, it turned into a huge thing. But basically they broke into their own room somehow. We don't know how. It just happened.
Yeah.
But all of these interesting accommodations, they served us. They served us pretty well, and we really had a great time in Krakow, getting to that wintry bit of the trip, and that was the first of it that we had, and really. Felt good. It felt good to be in the snow.
But you know, when you go on a trip like this, it's good to be doing fun things and to have adventures. But at the same time, you have to also acknowledge the history and what has happened there in the past, because the people who live there sure do. They get it. They understand. They remember. And when you're in a place like Krakow, you have the opportunity. To take a trip to Auschwitz, one of the most infamous concentration camps of the Holocaust. It's about an hour and a half away. It's easy to work out with any place that you're staying to get picked up and driven out there. And we did that. Spent a day in the cold, in the snow. There were so many people that were out there, too. It was really kind of distracting because it was just so crowded. I thought in the wintertime maybe it wouldn't be. But once we were able to see past all that and get away from the more annoying people who weren't really paying attention to the gravity of the situation, I think we were able to have, you know, the true meaning sink in, the true horror of what went on there in that place. You walk through the buildings. You see the places where people were massacred by firing squad. You see where people were starved to death. And walking around in the winter, you just you feel it. You feel the cold. It's really, really hard to explain. But it's something that is not pleasant. It's not a fun thing to do, but it's something that I think everybody has to do, and not with a crowd of people, not with a crowd of party goers or classmates or things like that. Go by yourself. Go with one or two other people. Go with people who will get it and who won't complain about being uncomfortable and who, you know, for God's sake, don't bring toddlers with you. It's not for toddlers. People did that, and it's just unfortunate when there are people who don't take it as seriously as it should be taken. This is something that we all need to see. This is something we all need to experience, because this is who we are. This is what humans can do. And the moment we forget that is the moment that we open the door to having it happen all over again. Seen it time and time again where people just, you know, are oblivious to that, and it's such a tragedy. But I know there are other places to go to see the horrors. I've seen a couple of them. Nothing really hits me as much as Auschwitz. It's my second time there. Your first time, right, Kyle?
Yeah, I'd never ever been there, but definitely studied this part of our history in the 20th century and understood the gravity. In fact, I was a little concerned when we started planning our trip, but you know, I had my anxiety about it, but you know, it was good to talk and know that, you know, we both felt it was important, and read up on it and had prepared myself a little bit more than just you know, on a whim deciding to go, and things like the renewed interest and the time we're living through now, I think, has made it an incredibly popular place to go. And when you read about going, they suggest don't bring people younger than 14. I think that's a wise thing to really take into consideration, to heed. Because we were there, and there's people with strollers and kids, and I really don't think you're taking in what that place represents and what happened there. And I can kind of get why people even think that visitors really shouldn't be allowed there. And there's a whole gamut of a thought about that place and how it is run now. But the museum there is actually doing a really incredible job curating it, and especially in this time when there is such renewed interest. I think they said they had 2 million visitors in the last year, or in 2017, and the facility itself was built for about 500,000 a year.
Yeah.
So they are running at like four times the capacity. There's still attributes of it that are under renovation now. They're trying to keep buildings standing and keep things preserved. Be able to continue to tell the story there. You say Auschwitz, but Birkenau is adjacent to it, and the much larger of the two sites. It's truly a chilling place to go. And as you said, in winter, provided that contrast, it was not a springtime thing or a sunny day. It was as dark and chilling and gloomy as the history itself.
It's just bitter cold, snow, and that is definitely a way to see that place and feel it at the same time. And they take you into these rooms. I'll try to describe them, but rooms filled with suitcases. You know, because the people arrived there, you know. I don't know if I can get through this, but they arrived there thinking that they were just going away, you know, and
they're going to be relocated.
Yeah,
and they're bringing all of their possessions, they're bringing belongings to start a new life, or
you
to
see
be,
pictures,
to be
you see
relocated.
Pictures of kids getting off the train with suitcases, and the captures on the way to death because they were killed, you know, minutes after.
And every single step of how that was designed was just so sinister in the psychology of it, leading people places, mm-hmm. under the guise of one thing and just coldly and cruelly lying and victimizing people just with such callousness. The mechanization was evident in everything. I don't even know if I really want to get into it, but I noticed so many little details in every aspect of the bureaucracy that was there, and mm-hmm. How things were divided up, belongings and everything, and just the dehumanization.
It was all so planned out, so coldly calculated.
Choreographed.
You just have to wonder, today, with technology, how much more efficient that would have been. It's sickening, and that's the danger of not remembering, of not feeling this, because if you don't, it's going to catch you by surprise, because believe me, there are people out there who are just as cold and calculating and filled with hate. You know, they may not have the power right now, but at some point they will get the power, and they'll be able to implement their wishes, and that's when we'll realize, you know, it's too late. So it's so damn important to go to a place like this and you know, experience it and feel it. It's not going to feel good, you know. And we were kind of in stunned. I mean, we went on a minibus with you know, some strangers. We picked up at other hotels, and you know, it was conversation on the way in, pretty much silence on the way out. You know, that's how you feel. That's how it should feel. But okay, I don't want to spend the rest of the show on that.
Maybe
just something that I think people really, really need to do.
Yeah, we should talk about it more, I think, in the future, maybe when we have a bit more time, because I noticed a lot, and it really did affect me, and I think we both came away from it just a little different, a little bit more certain about you know, how you address that that specter, you know, and where those outcomes come from, and the kind of hate, and I don't know. I hope that we continue to remember these parts of history, and that it's not forgotten. I've taken for granted that, you know, as much as I know about it, that there are a lot of you know, not everybody has had that kind of education, and their proximity to it is not quite the same, or their proximity is to other wars and other events that their family has been involved with, or that they have researched and learned about. And we really, you know, these things have consequences and leave scars. So
absolutely, this is a scar that we need to always focus on. And you know, there's all kinds of horrors that continue to happen that have happened since. It's not a competition. You know, this is something that is a pivotal point in human history that needs to be focused on by everybody as a lesson. And nobody is immune from falling victim, both to the evil people or becoming evil people themselves. It's certainly possible. But let's move on, because there was so much more to our travels. We went on from Krakow to Berlin, as we mentioned. In fact, that was a challenge getting a train ticket to Berlin. I think we had to.
You went and talked to one of the customer service agents, I think.
Counselors.
Yeah.
I knew I wasn't going to be able to get a direct ticket from any of the nasty people that are at the ticket desk.
That was smart. You don't go to any of the walk-up counters, any of the booths, anything numbered. Forget it.
Mm-hmm.
Domestic, international, none of that's going to help you.
No.
It's a waste. They're going to tell you, no, I don't speak English, or they won't say anything. And then,
oh, they'll just say no. There's no train.
No train.
You cannot go there.
You can point to all the train books you want. Well, you can. Actually, train books have helped at these kinds of counters. But that's a last resort. The smart thing is go in, talk to a counselor. And what they are is someone at a very, very low desk, and they have their own printer.
Well, you go into their office and you sit down, and you know, there's a little mint candy you can take.
You have a nice, pleasant conversation. You tell them, you know, do you speak English? And, yeah, this is what I'd like to do. And they're like, okay, yeah. And you know exactly when the train is, as you do, and they can help you.
She was able to sell me a ticket up to a town in Poland near the German border.
Right.
And that's as far as she could get me. She couldn't get me into Germany. It sounds so nefarious somehow. But in that particular town, that is where I could get a ticket to Berlin. And it's weird because I was, you know, it was a Polish town, but the German train, and it was basically a local train, ran one stop into Poland. And we didn't know how to buy the ticket. We knew that we had to get to this place. We had about an hour to figure the whole thing out. Of course, when we got there, everything was closed. There was no machine. So we figured, okay, we'll just buy it on the train. Hopefully they take credit cards.
But you did the smart thing. You're verifying. And one thing you need to get very familiar with if you're going to use trains in these areas is the sheets. We were able to verify that train would show up. And what they are is huge printouts. There's yellow and white. And I think one's arrivals and departures are one or the other. But you have to be very comfortable. And whenever you see them, you go up and you really got to look at it. It's worthwhile. It is your friend. It will tell you all the trains that are coming in, all the times. It'll tell you cities they're going to. And you verify it.
And then, tracks, the track that they stop on.
Absolutely. And, of course, platform, because you can get that all screwed up.
We only have 1 minute left. So let me just very quickly say that so we knew when the train was showing up. We got on the train. It was a very small train, and it had a machine on it.
This was the one we were mentioning earlier,
the machine only spoke German and Polish.
That's right, Polish and German. So we were using translate things and figuring it out, and we figured out we needed A and B to get into Berlin, that's what we wanted is one ticket, which we had to figure out what button was single use and all that. And then by the time we had it all memorized, And just before we got our tickets checked, we bought two tickets, and it cost us something like nine euros or
well, the
five
whole
euros.
Trip, the whole trip from Krakow to Berlin cost us much less than it should have, because it should have, you know, when you read in the books, get a ticket for as little as 60 euro, we paid less than that. We paid something like 40. Again, it was all day on the train.
This is by going and talking to the counselor at the Polish station.
Pretty much. And just taking local trains.
And then getting the local tickets on this regional train to clear us through Berlin and get us on the S-Bahn was all...
Yeah, we're out of time.
Much cheaper.
You know, I'm only in Germany. And then we went to Iceland. And it was, you know, but we were very quick through Iceland. Maybe we'll talk about that sometime.
There's no snow in Iceland.
Well, no, there wasn't any snow in Iceland.
It's all rain.
It's colder here than it is there. And that's definitely a problem.
Oh, they're pushing us out.
Yeah, we're out of time. But write to us, otw@2600.com. Didn't get to talk about Brexit, but you know what? Maybe next week. I'm sure things will change by then. We'll be back, hopefully, and Finn will be up next.
Is the government still shut down?
What?
Is the government still shut down?
Our government's shut down, too. But, you know, these things happen.
Maybe it'll be open next week.
We'll talk about this next week when things will change. Good night.
Good night.